Richardson on WLOB 100.5 FM.
I don't know how this whole business started. Of you thinking that I had been untrue. But if you think that we'd be better parted, break away from you.
807, you're listening to 100.5 FM. Sherry from Addison, Maine says, Colonel Potter called it horse hockey. I think that's a good one. Horse hockey. You don't know who Colonel Potter is, do you, Doe?
I do.
You don't, Doe?
He replaced Colonel Henry Blake.
He did. That's right. That was from the show, Matt.
That was a sad episode when Henry Blake's plane went down.
Oof. When Radar O'Reilly walked into the...
Without a mask.
And yes, he did. And announced he... I remember. I teared up. I did. We loved MASH. It was a great show.
Great show.
Anyhow, Colonel Potter called it horse hockey. I think that's what we'll call it from now on. Or I could just say it's Kamala hockey.
By the way, do you know that... I just realized this at the break. It was 19 years ago this month that JJ first threw me headfirst into this studio.
Really?
With you. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was October of 2005.
19 years ago.
19, that's how long
that's
we've
right.
known
that
each other.
That book came out about the USS Constitution.
Yeah. Call to the Sea, that was my first book.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And J.J., can I tell the story again?
Yeah,
So
we love J.J.'s story.
I had never met Ray or Ted, and first time doing live radio, I come into the studio, well, I'm outside of the studio with, and J.J. comes over to me. He says, What are those? And he's looking at a stack of 3x5 index cards because I like to be prepared for things, you know, for classes or whatever. And so I came up with all the questions I thought that Ray and Ted might ask me and like two or three bullets. And I was trying to memorize everything. And I told JJ this. And there's like 30 seconds left until I come in here. JJ rips out all the cards from my hands, throws them into the trash can. He says, you go in there and you talk to those guys like they're your bartenders. Do you understand me? And I was like, yes, sir. And you know what? I haven't had a bad day since. I'm still waiting for a good Manhattan from you, Ray, but, you know.
You'd have to get that from Didi or my son, Trip. They both can pour good Manhattans, not me. Yeah,
JJ was the best.
Yeah, he was. And that's true. I remember that story. That was so funny. So funny. Did you ever meet J.J. Dove?
No,
that's too bad.
I was meeting Claude.
Yeah, that's too bad. That's too bad.
Almost as good.
Yeah.
I didn't party with the Beatles, though. That's the thing.
That's a good point. The Beatles, Drew Barrymore, Courtney Cox, you name it. Did he have the stories. Holy cow.
Really?
Oh, my goodness. He had the stories. Well, you know, it was Cousin Brucey, Wolfman Jack, and J.J. Jeffrey. They were the three big dogs back in the day, music-wise, in the country.
And growing up in Lewiston, you know, I was listening to WBLM, which JJ was at.
Right.
You know?
JJ and Doc Fuller. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and that alone, the stories there, Doc Fuller and JJ Jeffrey, 65-year friendship, I think it was.
Jeez.
65 years. Friends.
That's amazing.
I mean, just so close. And JJ's missed. It was a blessing that God took him when he did because he was sick. And JJ would have hated all of that. JJ was a man who lived his entire life after getting out of the Army on his own terms. He did what he wanted to do, and if he didn't want to do it, by golly, he didn't do it. That's the way to live. That is the way to live, no doubt. So, Doe, what do you think?
Hey, how's it? Good to meet you, Claude.
See.
Good to be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Blessing.
Things good?
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah?
Yeah, doing well. Watched the interview last night.
You watched it?
Watched it and I rewatched it. I wanted to make sure I caught the nuance. Fascinating.
You couldn't believe what you saw, could you?
It was extremely interesting. You know, every single time there was anything tough, she went right to Donald Trump. And but I think it went perfectly for the Trump campaign. I'll tell you why. It wasn't. I think she gave a lot of red meat to the TDS folks and the hardcore Dems, kind of on. Turnout focus is probably where they are, but I don't think she won over any viewers.
Mm-mm.
Just not Trump was basically the answer to everything.
She demonstrated she had a mastery of nothing, but I hate Trump. Megyn Kelly put this out on Twitter X. She said, two things clear from that interview. Number one, Kamala Harris hates Donald Trump. And number two, she knows nothing other than point one.
And what makes it so why I say perfect is because I'll go back to the debate with Biden, with Trump, where the conventional wisdom was that she won and had done well. But if you understood how Trump was finding his micro audience within the audience, the independent voters, 10% of the listeners, not the independent voters, the undecided voters, he dominated in that group. And that was really the turning point. And man, so much went on there. And that's when you really saw things turning. And what was nice about that was the Democrats who watched it thought that she crushed it, thought they were going to be in great shape. I think similarly, they viscerally, emotionally loved what they saw. I mean, she was a real champion for their worldview last night, which is Trump is, you know, Hitler, which is their entire campaign. And she leaned into it, and she probably is being regarded in heroic ways among the folks running the show there. I think her campaign staff, they were waving Brett off at the end. You could see everyone was looking to the side, and he was a little bit confused, and then he clarified later that they shut it down way early because they realized that it was high risk. But she avoided a disaster, which I think is good. A disaster for her would have been a cause for pivoting and changing course for the Dems. But like I said, I think the folks running the campaign and the hardcore, the TDS folks, and she's clearly captain of that team now with how he's living in her head rent-free on every single issue. That's their worldview, but it's a losing worldview, and the tone deafness was consistent throughout. I think anyone with an open mind and undecided is going to go the other way. You know, when we're looking at preparing for trials, we just met Claude, but I'm a trial lawyer, so you know, we take depositions and before trial, and then you got to kind of marshal it and figure out what you're going to do with it and what you're going to show the jury and what you're going to focus on. And one of the most important things to do is to kind of block out, what's being said literally, the words, you know, because so many lawyers make the mistake of focusing on the literal, the verbiage, and you see all these debates in law, what's how many whatever on the pin of a, on the head of a pin, and no one really cares, or even it's so boring. But Trump cuts through all that, when we're marshaling things for trial, you look for not the words, you look for what's 90% of communication, which is combination of body language and tone of voice. And her body language and tone of voice were a disaster. And for people who know how to evaluate that, that's why you're going to see her not get any bounce, and Trump's going to continue to surge, because her tone of voice was not confident at all. It was very angry, very defensive, and her body language was just the same. From the beginning, her legs were crossed, her arms were crossed. She was just did not look confident at all. And if you mute the sound when you're looking at TV interviews or deposition video preparing for trial, you can really evaluate things a lot more clearly than if you're actually listening to the words.
Dove, do you have to do that for jury selection, don't you?
Well, that's a different thing. But you have to determine
not only with questions but getting a sense of the jurors, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that would be more akin to getting a sense of the voters here, right? And you do the voir dire. Mm-hmm. First juries, they're called veneers. Veneer in Latin means to come. So
it's French too. Derivative of Latin, of course. Yeah.
So it's like over 100 usually jurors in the veneer, and then you have usually one day before trial starts where there's jury selection, and you got to get that 150 down to 12. 14, 6, 8, whatever the number is, whatever the type of case. And usually questionnaires are used, in Maine, but there's been a lot of efforts to increase attorney-directed voir dire, where you ask the questions. And that's an amazing psychological field in terms of how to approach that.
Because there are experts that assist lawyers for that in some cases, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And personally, I've something that I do and have been consulted on by many trial lawyers in terms of these issues. So something spent a lot of time with, and that interview was in fact a disaster. But I think it was perfect for the Trump campaign, because I think the folks who hate Trump running the Democratic campaign will miss it. I think they think that she did great and stood her ground and was tough and called him out, spoke truth. And so I don't think we're going to see a pivot. I think they're going to double down like they did after they thought she won the debate, which she may have in some ways, but not for the micro audience that Trump had honed in on. And when they did the focus groups, and mainstream news did focus groups on the undecided voters after that debate, and it was like 8-1 in terms of which way they went.
She got no bump from the debate. So if she won, it was a meritless victory, or
Pyrrhic.
Yes, that's the word I'm looking
for. Pyrrhic
victory, yeah. Thank you.
This is going to be a close one.
You think so?
Yeah, really. I think we'll know pretty early on. If the results from Pennsylvania come in, I think that'll be a determining factor. Once, I don't know how early they'll have the results.
I don't think we're going to know Pennsylvania for a few days because... Yeah. Although they did go in and say, which is so astonishing that this had to be stated, they did say that the dates have to be correct on the absentee ballots.
Yeah.
It's so astonishing.
But also on the East Coast, North Carolina, we might
That's
not know
worry.
North Carolina, but how do you, given the level of devastation, we're 3 weeks away from an election and you have an entire portion of the state that may, I don't know how they're doing it, to be honest with you. I haven't followed it that much.
Roy Cooper has provided, the governor of North Carolina has, to this moment, today is the, the 17th of October.
Yeah.
So we are less than 3 weeks away. To this moment, Governor Roy Cooper of North Carolina has provided no guidance on how he's going to ensure that those devastated by Hurricane Helene will be able to cast their ballot and have their voice heard. He has provided no guidance on that whatsoever.
Yep, that could be huge.
Yeah, but he's going to win Georgia. You know, Youngkin is saying he's going to win Virginia, and if you get outside of the northern area of Virginia.
But the northern portion of Virginia, and I used to live there, has become so blue that it overshadows the rest of the state. So you had a red state, you know, 20. Well, look, New Hampshire was a red state when I was in college, yeah. going to school in New Hampshire. It was a red state.
But here's the thing, though, and this is a really important point that was not mentioned in media today, but anybody can go look it up because I sure did. So the FBI put out statistics, crime statistics. Oh, yeah. In 2020, for 2022, the last year that the information is available, they initially said nationwide, violent crime in this country was down 2.1%, which is a Democratic talking point. They very quietly revised that information recently and said, that's not true.
It's 4.5.
Violent crime is actually up 4.5% nationally. And part of what's happened in that really very blue area of Virginia you're talking about is they've had a big rise in violent crime.
Oh,
and
yeah.
A lot of the people there are tired of it now. That's the one thing we're hearing. We knew violent crime had risen. It had to, because if you take the regular crime that occurs in this country and then you add to it the number of crimes that are committed by illegals, right now the estimate is of the 11 million that have come in here, 425,000 of those people have committed crimes other than just coming across the border illegally. Again, why are we importing crime when we already have enough crime in this country is bizarre to me. And then people are hailing it as, well, if you don't think this is okay, you're a xenophobe or whatever stupid word these stupid people come up with. And they are ignorant. I define stupid as willfully ignorant. But so now the FBI has revised it and told us what we already knew. That violent crime in this country is up. And a lot of it is gang activities from gangs from foreign nations. You know, I don't know if you guys caught J.D. Vance on with Martha Raddatz over the weekend from ABC.
Yeah, I caught part of that. But the part
and
where...
He just metaphorically slapped her around. He said to her, Martha, do you hear what you're saying? She said, well, it's only a few apartment complexes that are being overtaken by the gangs.
But it's not the apartment complexes in her neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, it never is because she's in a gated community where they have security because she makes millions of dollars to lie to the American people, like a lot of the people in this country do. They get rich lying to the American people. But the regular folks of America, the ones that are struggling under 24.1% cumulative inflation, the ones that can't pay for their gas and their food and buy their kids cleats for soccer, those people, they don't have a gated community. They don't have security that they pay for. they try to walk down the streets looking over one shoulder to make sure that something bad isn't happening to them or their family. They don't live the life of Martha Raddatz.
Well, you know, Dove, I think you're probably too young to remember this gentleman, but he was a talk show host in Boston when I was there for grad school in the late 80s. Gene Burns, he was on RKO. And Gene Burns, almost every every day, asked a simple question. What is the role of government in a free and just society?
Hmm.
And when you look at it, it's education, it's securing, making sure citizens are secure in order to pursue what they want. Can you secure the borders? Can you provide basic security to cities and towns? But it runs the gamut. But they're all basic functions. You know, can you have the freedom to do this? Freedom of speech. I mean, we've seen this recently, and I think this was one of the more disturbing trends, where you have Hillary Clinton, you have John Kerry, and some others who are running for office, and I think it was Hillary Clinton who said, we need to maintain control. And I was like, wait a minute, that's not what the media is about. It's not about control. Right. It's about having, you know, Ray, you have a show. And guess what? The other side has shows as well. And that is good for our society, because you have open debates about issues. And this has gone on throughout our country's history. And again, I was a Jacksonian historian for the Navy. You look at reading through the newspapers of the 1830s, you had Jacksonian papers, you had anti-Jacksonian papers. You had the, you know, Dr. Champy said this earlier this morning. You had the Federalist Papers and you had the Anti-Federalist Papers, and it was healthy. It was a debate. Each side is free to express themselves, to make their arguments. It's not about suppressing the other side. It's encouraging it. And that's, again, that's why I wanted to have that breakfast, Ray. I wanted to have both the Republican nominee and the Democratic nominee talking about the issues unedited, and having the freedom to speak to each other and to a broader audience about this.
Yeah.
You know? And again, I will praise Demi Kazunas and David Costello to high heavens, because they were both willing to do that, and they just did it so beautifully.
Yeah. And that's what this is all about. This is why it's so important. And when you hear people like Kamala Harris and Tim Walz and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry, these are the overlords of the modern Democratic Party talking about the suppression of expression. I mean, Kerry said very clearly, if we don't win and control what's being said, we can't take over.
Yeah, it's
just bizarre.
Just connecting some of the dots you guys have astutely touched on, the point about open dialogue is a problem for a party or a side that doesn't have the facts. Right. And in many cases that I look at, the facts, they're always the most important starting point. And some cases are a slam dunk. Other cases are unwinnable. And then a lot are in the middle. And good lawyering can win many of them that are in the middle. But if you have horrible facts, then there's no lawyer in the world who's going to be able to win it. I'll just finish the point. The Democrat candidates now, with immigration and the economy being the top issue, they just don't have any facts. I mean, it's a disaster. So it's actually, you know, what you see with the open dialogue. You mentioned the Vance Raddatz interview. What he did there, he gave a masterclass in how to engage the opposition, but not throughout. In that exchange that you referenced, which was the highlight, because it was the way to do it. And the way to do it is when you're dealing with a party that's full of it and doesn't have the facts in a particular case, you have to engage them. Now, in order to engage them, you have to be, first of all, intelligent to understand the context, the facts, and know that when you engage, you have a confidence in your position and you're going to be able to engage constructively. Now, that's a big problem, because not that many people in the political realm, you know, they're more like Kamala, who's memorized and has her Donald Trump index card, if she had an index card like you did, Claude. But what happened there was he engaged her and was willing to do it, didn't know how it was going to go, but he's extremely smart, JD. And what led to, because Martha Raddatz and what she was saying and trying to distort the reality, and I think it was Springfield or whatever they were talking about, I think it was Aurora, right?
Where the Aurora, Colorado.
The apartment complexes.
Right.
And in her arguing her position without the facts, inevitably said something absurd, which is what good trial lawyers will then pounce on, whether in deposition or at trial. And JD, a lawyer, although I don't think he's practiced, but has some background. He pounced on it and said, with a very powerful device, the rhetorical question to someone who's just said something absurd: do you hear what you just said? Mm-hmm. And now that became viral because it exposed the absurdity. That happened again last night on immigration.
Right.
The most important question in the country right now. He and Brett did a really nice job. He opened up and he said, how many millions do you think have come into the country? And she immediately evaded, never answered that
question.
Wouldn't
address it.
And then she immediately tried to pivot to the last 9 months after that ridiculous bill that would have allowed 1.8 million illegal immigrants every year and codified it. But they're playing another absurd card that was the answer to immigration that Trump shut down. But she started focusing on that. And then Brett, willing to engage, very, very prepared, immediately said, no, that was within the last year. I'm talking about the first 3 years.
Yep. Right.
Well, let's talk about the first 3 years.
Well, that used to be the debate, though. We used to have facts, and then we'd debate what the conclusion of the meaning is. Today, one side has facts, and the other side has fantasy.
And my point is, they know it, and that's why Kamala hasn't done any real interviews. The only reason she's done them, 60 Minutes with Bill Whitaker, who was, again, masterclass, and last night with Brett, who did a nice job. It got the two substantive open dialogue conversations where she didn't have it all scripted and had picked the Michelob with Colbert or Howard Stern or Call Me Daddy or any of these, in the bag outfits. She was exposed because she doesn't have the facts. There's no candidate in the world, probably, but there are many who could do it better than she. But they have no facts. On immigration, they opened the border.
Dov, I'm going to have to disagree with you, respectfully disagree with you on the approach, because the underlying assumption you have is that facts always win, I think, that one party has facts and the other doesn't. But if you look back on Federalist Paper 10 and where they're talking about the passions of the people and what drives individuals, we're not a people say we're a nation of laws and facts. We're not. We're a nation of politics. And so that's why you can have a political commercial in, say, 1964, where LBJ has the famous The Girl in the Daisy Field commercial with the nuclear bomb going off in the background. It's about, in some cases, that can be far more effective than a presentation of the facts.
I absolutely agree with you, and I'll clarify my point, because it's true. There's emotion, and it's much more powerful than facts, unless you have a video recording of someone murdering someone with video and audio for everyone to see, and that's getting played to the jury. Those facts are unwinnable facts if you're defending that person. Now, can you potentially pull a Johnny Cochran with the glove don't fit and do something with that? Maybe, but there are facts because of the strength of the evidence. The analog here is what Biden and Harris did in the first week, eliminating the 90 executive orders and opening the border. Everyone saw it. We all saw it defended. They said it was secure. They said it was all made up. And now they're telling the American people that they don't believe your ears and your eyes. And that never happened.
But again, that's a court of law. I'm talking about the court of public opinion.
Well, we were talking about jurors earlier. That's just a slice of public opinion.
Sorry. Can we pause it right here? Because we got to go to break.
Sorry.
This is fascinating, and the clock really is infuriating me. Right.
Sorry about that.
No. It's not your fault. The clock is infuriating. Building tomorrow's leaders. At ABC Maine, we're not just building structures. We're building the future. Our commitment to excellence in training and education ensures that the next generation of construction leaders are equipped with the skills they need to succeed. Join us at ABC Maine, where we empower our members with unmatched resources, from apprenticeship programs to safety training. Together, we're constructing a stronger tomorrow. Visit abcmaine.org and start building your future today. At Community Pharmacy, you trusted us with your vaccines for flu, COVID, and RSV. Let us continue to build that relationship by filling your prescriptions. We have 8 convenient locations. Go to communityrx.com to find out more.
My name is Kenny Chinkett. You may know me as the founder of Eric's Church Bar and Grill and Window, but this advertisement is to support my candidacy for Maine State Senate. Being a lifelong Mainer, I know we can get taxes and the cost of living back down while we grow wages. So if you live in Westbrook, Wyndham, Raymond, Casco, or Fry Island, then I humbly ask for your vote this election to represent you in Augusta, because Maine deserves better. Paid for and authorized by Kenny for Senate.
If you have the will, they'll teach you the skill. Gorham Sand & Gravel is looking for competent, capable construction workers to join their team. Gorham Sand & Gravel is a family-owned earthwork